This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Chief Rabbi, Rabbi Eloy, Rabbi Krugstad, Rabbi Rosenblum, Rabbi Lipsker, other Rabbonim Chashuvim, President of the Union of Orthodox Synagogues, ladies and gentlemen, I must first of all thank the Chief Rabbi for honoring me to have been one of the people to say a few words of Hesped. Although it's a function for which I feel totally inadequate. In Rishonim, Kamalochim, Anuti Bnei Odom, for if they were like angels, we are like humans, and if they were like humans, we are like asses, the Gemara says. And just as an ass is incapable of comprehending what a human being is, and just as a human being is incapable of comprehending what an angel is, so it is beyond our capability to comprehend anything of what these Gedolei HaDor were. I know that I have been zoche to this privilege because of the fact that I had the honor of spending some of the last weeks of Rav Moshe's life in his home and in the home of his family, seeing him virtually every day of my visit to New York, talking in Torah with him, with his son-in-law and with his grandson. And yet those very days that I spent with him make me feel all the more inadequate. For each additional day heightened the acuteness of my awareness of the unbridgeable gap that exists between our conception of what greatness is and who these people were. Nevertheless, I shall try in just a few minutes, firstly to introduce Rav Moshe to you. Secondly, a few brief biographical notes and a sketchy personality portrait. We've had a very moving picture already from Rabbi Rosenblum, who knew him far better. And perhaps a little insight into his derech in halacha, into his way in tzach, with an explanation as to the reason for its being controversial and little understood. The Rambam says, "Kol Adam Roi Lo Li Yos Tzadik Moshe Rabbeinu Erosho Ki Yerovam." Every human being is capable of being as righteous as Moshe or as wicked as Yerovam. Or Chacham Oisofet. Is also that every human being is capable of being wise or being foolish. Hu me'atmo yumidato noitele zederech sheyirtzeh, says the Rambam. He, with his own volition and his own decision, tends towards whichever way he wishes. And on that, the Hagos Maimonides asks that this appears to be in conflict with the Gemara in Nida. The Gemara says that the angel appointed for pregnancy takes the fetus at the time of conception and stands it before the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, "God, tell us what is going to be with this fetus. Is he going to be gibor or cholosh? Is he going to be strong or weak? Chacham or tipesh? Will he be wise or foolish?" The only thing he does not ask, says the Gemara, is whether he's going to be righteous or wicked. For Hakol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Miyira Shemayim. Everything is in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam, with the exception of character development. That is the only thing we are really responsible for ourselves. And also our ghost Maimonides, if everything is in the hands of God except for Yira Shemayim, and specifically wisdom and foolishness, which is mentioned as one of the things the angel addresses to God, how can the Rambam say it is within our own hands to be Chacham Oisofet? And yet there's an explicit pasuk in Mishlei that answers that question. Yiras Hashem Reishis Das. Yiras Hashem, character development, which is the one factor within our own control is, says Mishlei Reshit Da'at, that the beginning of intelligence. And since Yiras Shamayim is in our control, the first steps of intelligence are in our control. And the Vilna Gaon says it out straight. If he doesn't have strong character and fine character, if he's not a Yorei Shamayim, Azuevil, then he's a fool. The interconnectedness between character strength and Torah intelligence. It is therefore understood why in the 48 ways with which the Torah is acquired, we find the majority of them are not matters of intellectual diligence and mental application. The majority of them are character attributes. Erech Apayim, forbearance, another humility, tire or purity, Makiris Makoima, knowing one's place, Misrachek Minakobe, distancing oneself from honor. These are the ways one acquires intelligence, not piety. These are the ways one becomes a Talmid Chochem. Vesei Boelim Chaveiro, sharing burdens with friends, and so on. This was Reb Moshe Feinstein. I speak primarily of him because I did not know that Yaakov Kamenetsky. His gigantic intellectual scholarship and his gigantic intellectual stature and his superlative scholarship were inextricably intertwined with his saintliness and with the strength and character of his noble soul. He was born in 1895 near Minsk. At the age of 26 in 1921 he became the Rov of Luban, at which point he was already issuing tshuvas. In 1937 he came to the United States. In 1959 the first volume of Igros Moshe was published. In 1962 he was appointed as the chairman, the head of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah of the United States, of that body of Gedolim that guide the policy of the Torah world. A sketchy portrait. Let's have a look at the personality through some of those 48 ways, and we'll get some picture of who Reb Moshe was. Just a picture. For just as a picture is so far from the reality, so can anything we say this evening be only a glimpse at something that we can't fully conceive. One who loves humanity, of which Rabbi Rosenblum has already talked, and noisei ba'olim chaveiro, sharing a burden with a friend. In New York, when one speaks of the Rov nowadays, one is usually referring to Rabbi Yoshua ben Soloveitchik. When one referred to the Rosh Yeshiva, Avdil ben Achaim v'Amisi, one was usually referring to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. It has often been commented that it should have been the other way around. Because Rabbi Yoshua ben Soloveitchik has become acknowledged as the Rosh Yeshiva par excellence. And it was Rabbi Moshe Feinstein who was the Rov. He was the Rov of Kol Ha'olam Kulo. He was the Rov of the entire world. That a Rov who treated the world as a Rov treated his shtetl. He paskened with the warmth and with the care and with the concern for each individual wherever in the world he was. Just as the Rov of the little shtetl, as he himself would have paskened in Luban. Rabbi Rosenblum mentioned how he often asked about the people he knew. I can be amazed that only days before his death, he was mentioning the names of people in this town, some of whom are here, asking interestedly about each one of them. He saw every shaila as a personal dilemma, not as an academic exercise. A personal dilemma which needed a solution, an authentic solution. Sometimes even an accommodation, but of course never a compromise. Some years ago he phoned his son-in-law, Rabbi Tendler, and asked him to acquire some medical information for him in order to pass him on a shaila in Nidon. 2 hours later he was on the phone again, to ask Rabbi Tendler whether he had the information for him. Rabbi Tendler explained to him that since the first phone call he'd given one shiur in Gemara and a lecture in biology. He only had 5 minutes to get from the shiur room to the classroom, and that he didn't yet have the opportunity to gather together the medical information that Rav Moshe had needed. And Rav Moshe told him off. I have a woman here sitting with a shaila, and you haven't had the time to attend to it. He couldn't understand that anything could have come before a human being's problem. There was a real woman with a real problem waiting for a real answer. And when that was the case, nothing got in the way. On my first day in New York, when I sat in the lounge, a room or two away from his bedroom where he was resting, I had no intention of meeting with him or disturbing him that first day, but merely discussing with his grandson the program of the coming weeks, what we would discuss, how we would discuss it, and when we would discuss. Unbeknown to me, Rav Moshe had seen me sitting at the table some hours before, and saw me there again some hours later, or heard me. And again I heard him telling off his grandson. He didn't know who I was yet. This man has been here for 2 hours while I've been sleeping. How can you leave him with a problem like that? Send him in. He couldn't understand that somebody could be left waiting when there's a shaila, when there's a problem. His grandson explained to him what I was there for. Another is one of the 48 ways, modesty, of which one could carry on speaking the whole evening, but merely to understand his lifestyle. No appointment was ever necessary to see or speak to the great Rav Moshe Feinstein. You simply turned up and knocked at the door. And if he was asleep, very often you would be told by the Rebbetzin that he was resting and you should come back later. But if he heard the knock at the door, he would shout from his bedroom, instructing her to let you in, not that so that you shouldn't be left waiting with a shaila. His telephone number was in the phone book. His address appeared on every book that he published. His home was open. And day and night, for years and years, people streamed in. How often was it that somebody came from overseas or from another city and only reached his door in the evening hours, and Rav Moshe, after attending to his shaila, would say to him, where are you going to sleep? And he would say, well, I'm going to find somewhere now to sleep. And Rav Moshe would say, no, you don't, you sleep here. And his own children would come home a little bit later from school or wherever they were and find there were guests in their beds, and they would have to go and find somewhere to sleep. There was no such thing as privacy in his home. His family suffered and realized that this was the price to pay for being the children and the Rebbetzin of the great Rav Moshe Feinstein. And yet, with all that humility, he was makiris makomo. He knew his place, which means two things: knowing where you don't belong and knowing where you do belong. Several years ago, it was necessary for him to have a pacemaker inserted into his heart. And after hearing the reasons for it and the medical advice, he continued to be hesitant. And again, his son-in-law, Rav Moshe Tendler, pressed him for the reasons of his hesitancy. And he wouldn't come out with it. Days later, Rabbi Tendler said to him, we're not going to continue with the procedure unless you're happy with it. What is bothering you? And he was forced to acknowledge, and he said, I know that I'm not fit to sit on a Sanhedrin. But I also know that there are not many more fit than I. And I know that if Mashiach comes today, I would be called upon to sit on the Sanhedrin. And I wouldn't like to be disqualified because of the imperfection that the insertion of the pacemaker might cause. It was maturus vacuum. There was modesty together with a knowledge of responsibility that went with his stature. He was erech apayim, he had forbearance, one could see by the way he listened to one. It could be a lady with a shaila and a blood spot on her egg. It could be a woman who phoned him to ask where she should buy her meat. She's just moved into his area. Those shailas that Moshe Feinstein used to get as well, and used to attend to them with the same seriousness that he would attend to shailas of Aguna and Mamzerus that he got from great Bosidin throughout the world. It was a real person with a real shaila, and nothing was more important. But one sees perhaps most of all his forbearance. if you compare the publication dates of each of his volumes with the dates of his latest tshuvas that appear in those volumes, and compare that with any other contemporary shailas and tshuvas, you will find that all contemporary shailas and tshuvas are published within a year, sometimes 2 or maximum 3 years after the dates of the latest tshuvas that are printed in them. But Moshe Feinstein, in accordance with the tradition of the great poskim, used to wait 20 and 30 years before the shailas were published. The seventh volume, which has just been published, deals with shailas from the 1960s. There is still an eighth volume to be published. He had the forbearance to wait, that the shailas settle, that the correspondents come and go, let there be time. It's not necessary to rush to publication straight away. Finally, just a short insight into his approach to halacha. He soul searched in two areas. Both of them were mentioned briefly by Rabbi Rosenblum. Firstly, what right have I to pastor? Secondly, what right have I to publish? On the first issue, just as his attitude on the question of his suitability for the Sanhedrin, he held that the measure of higia lohiro, when a person is fit to paskin, has to be measured relative to his own generation and not relative to great people of earlier generations. And as soon as he felt, together with the guidance of his father, his Rebbe, that in terms of his greatness relative to his own generation, he was competent to paskin, he began. And he believes that one needs to paskin competence. We heard from Rabbi Rosenblum the magnitude of his competence. In the last 18 months, he refused to paskin a shaila. He said he cannot anymore rely on his memory. But I was present when people put to them the way they wished to paskin, and he threw every conceivably relevant Gemara or Rishon at them that they might not have considered in reaching their decision. Right until the last days, he was learning 6 or 7 hours every day. His grandson, Rav Mordechai, used to sit with the Gemara, and he used to learn the Gemara by heart with Rashi and Tosfos. That he wouldn't trust his memory to paskin a shaila. That shows both his competence and the Yiras Shamayim and Kovod Rosh, the heavy-headedness, which he regarded as one of the qualifications for Pesach. Yiras Shamayim was also evident because when you stood before him, you felt you were in the presence of God, not because he was God, chas v'sholem, but because on his face you saw the reflection of the Ribbono Shel Olam. You were standing in front of somebody who saw himself standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you couldn't but be affected by that presence. And furthermore, he held, based on the Gemara in the beginning of Brochus, where David HaMelech, King David, says to God, "Aren't I pious that I have dirtied my hands with day-to-day shailas of women who have problems? Ask Rav Moshe, if it's such a thing, if it was so humiliating that you regard it as an act of piety, why didn't you send the shailas to somebody else? There were greater Rabbonim in the time of David HaMelech. Mephibosheth, David's own Rebbe, was a greater Talmid Chacham. Why didn't he send the shailas on? Why did he deal with it if he held it was infradig for a king to do so?" And Rav Moshe used to answer, and he brings it in his introduction, that if one is fit to paskin, one is not entitled to turn a shaila away. Because mitzvah habo leyot chal tach mitzena. A mitzvah which comes your way, you are not permitted to move off. And so every shaila he was confronted with received his attention, no matter what section of Shulchan Aruch it came from. On the question of publication, he makes it clear that his intention is not to issue decisions or to publish the conclusions. His intention is lelamed heich levarer es levarer et ha'alocha. His intention is to create a textbook of scholastic method in the psak of halacha. It is not the conclusions he wishes to rule, and he requests that every rabbi that uses his sefer uses the system, not necessarily the conclusion, and checks through it and satisfies himself that he understands the reasoning and is willing to apply it. He starts with no preconceived ideas, he is not influenced by any other authority, and even the great people that he quotes, the great authorities that he quotes, he subjects to his extremely critical intellect before using their decisions. He follows the school of Rabbi Akiva Eger, as laid out by his sons in Hagdome to the Tshuvos of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Finally, the terms machmir and mekil, a severe approach and a lenient approach, were terms that did not exist in his halachic vocabulary. In fact, they were terms that were anathema to him. The use of such terms used to actually get him angry. It is true that in those areas of religious practice that have been exposed to social pressure, where extreme degrees of religious meticulousness have evolved, some of Reb Moshe's decisions appear to be lenient. But it must be stressed this is only in relation to contemporary practice. It is not in relation to other exponents of the school from which he emanated. In relation to them, there is no specific leniency evident in Reb Moshe's tshuvos. And that's, for example, in areas where social pressure did not bring about the evolution of higher standards, such as in the areas of business ethics, of tax avoidance. We find Reb Moshe is uncompromisingly stringent in his psakim. But those psakim are rarely quoted. He's used for the areas where he is original in his quote-unquote leniency. He has remained consistent and faithful to the tradition of his school. It's rather the backdrop of contemporary religious life which has changed and become more severe, and thus created an illusion of leniency in some of his works. His faithfulness to his tradition did yield rich originality. For no one else of our generation was using the method of the school of the Vilna Gaon and Rabbi Akiva Eger in the paskening of halacha. So of course there was originality. For we live in a generation of information management. We no longer live in a generation of creative thought. He was still a creative thinker, not a manager of information. His originality became controversial, for scholars of our generation tend to debate conclusions while divorcing those conclusions from the very reasoning, the intellectual procedure which generated those conclusions. And hence the traditionality of his method escapes many. They see only the original decisions which are contrary to those of other contemporary poskim, and they sometimes feel threatened by that originality, which they often are not troubled to study and to understand. He, as we have said, was more concerned with the straightness and depth of his intellectual method than he was with a conclusion which he regarded in any case as the natural fruits of his efforts and his studies. Yes, his method was unique to our generation, for he indeed was not from our generation. Reb Moshe Feinstein was a gem formed in an earlier era, preserved for us to be the link between tomorrow and yesteryear. He was the last of the Tkufas HaAcharonim, that body of post-Shulchan Aruch scholars who used authentic traditional methods to take fresh looks at contemporary issues to reach creative and original solutions. Oilo lo ilom she'ovad manhigoy. Oyloy Litzfino Sheovdo Kavaniso, Amochim Yenachem Esamo Yisrael. May the Holy One comfort His people Israel.
Irgendwo ist ein riesiger Naid, ungefähr in Schwarzen, und er hat getrüht, in Gas. Und er hat ihn getrüht, was trüht er. Und ich sagte, er trüht auf dem Turm in Jerusalem. Und wenn er geantwortet, wie kommst du zu trüht auf dem Turm in Jerusalem? Wer winst du? Du sollst trüht auf dem Turm in Jerusalem. Und mit forschem Erklärung, jeder Jid hat recht zu trüht auf dem Turm in Jerusalem, weil was hat man dem Jiden gesagt, dass er scharf, als er heute der Erde zu tun. Das wird erklärt, weil er mit seinen Träumen wird er unterschätzen, dem Umweg, was es meint, Churm Yerushalayim. Bei ihm hier ist gekommen, aber auf Churm Yerushalayim trägt er, was heiser sein, zu brauchen geworden, zu sterben geworden. Und dann andere Sachen, was es passiert, materiell. Der Churm Yerushalayim meint, das sagt Tiefer und das sagt Heffen. Es meint, Schiene ist er weg, die Tore ist er nicht durch. Und immer ist ein koscheter Mensch, und er wird trägt, auf sein Leben, meint das, als er zu unterschätzen, die Werte und der Mundweg und der Bruch, was es meint, Churm Yerushalayim. Dasselbe versteht er, ich kenne es wegen der Gräßigkeit von Rabbi Yosef Kamenetzki und von der Meshach Feinstein, erstens, und ich mir gehabt, das Fuß zu kennen, sie persönlich. Bei ihm auch, wir haben Vergnügen zu reden nach dem Telefon mit der Meshach, zu reden mit der Scheile, welche er versteht sich momentan geändert. Jakob Kamenetzki, viele Kapitole geehrt in dem, was er ist geboren worden nach Städtel Balginev, dort diesen ganzen Apormeil weit von ein Städtel. Das meint er ist geboren geworden in unserer Welt. Größer dem, ob es ein Bieter. Ich will mir nicht beten, wenn die Avedes, wo der jüdische Kohl wird verloren, in der Sache zwei Delen, mit Fossonien, bei Wüsten der ganzen Welt, wo es das meint vom jüdischen Kohl, wenn er verliert, hat so viel Leben. Und speziell in heimlicher Zeit. Und gelernt, als wenn es ist nicht geworden, der größte Rosh Hashiva Chaim Shmulevitz, der Rosh Hashiva von Damir, trotzdem der größte Goyen, er auf Jolte, wenn wir uns nicht mehr zu kennen, so alle, er hat die Macht gegeben. Und er hat angefangen zu sagen, dann hätte er die Werte. Steht im Postit in Kehelet, Eis lo vedes, ve eis lo mus, von einem Zeiten, wenn ein Mensch da geboren werden, von einer Zeit, wenn er da starben. Eis wie freit, ve eis wie mleit, von einer Zeit zu brechen, von einer Zeit zu buhen, eis wie feit, ve eis wie feit, von einer Zeit zu weinen, und einer Zeit zu freien sein. Eis speit, ve eis refeit. Steht da ein bisschen anders. Steht nicht eis wie speit, oder eis wie feit. Als hier steht Eis Lifte, oder Eis Girte, steht Eis Feit, Eis Rete. Wer hat das Wert? Die Sochter stehen am Melech, die sich selbst weisen. Als Frann am Ohl, als Samen Heste, als Samen Tweer, als Eis Feit, die Zeit will. Nicht Eis Lifte, Frann am Zeiten, was wir dachten morgen, was wir dachten, was wir sagen. Die Welt allein, der Holai Kun, die ganze Existenz, die ganze Natur weint. Eis fehlt, die Zeit fehlt, die Kufe weint. Und das steht im Medrash. Der Meshach Rabbeinu ist nicht geboren. Steht im Medrash, Shomayim weichen, die Himmel umgeweint. Und sie haben gesagt, ob hat Chosid den Ohren verloren gegangen, der Chosid von der Welt. Und Eretz weichen, die Erde geweint. Und sie haben gesagt, die Joshua Odomoyen, der rechtfertigste Mensch in Deutschland auf der Welt. Heißt doch das, dass die Himmel und die Erde weinen, wenn ein Mensch Rabbeinu geht er weg. Das meint von einem Gott und von dem Kaliber. Nach solchen Dingen, der Allianz Kamenetzki, der alle Mensch auf Einstellen, dann sehen wir in der Rest der Welt, ist die Zeit allein weint. Die Welt weint, die Himmel und die Erde. Und darf man so keine Späte, weil er die Natur allein wünschen. Und als er ist hier, er ist okay, aber wir fragen, wenn die Zeit kommt, als er ist in den Posse, verhoren Kirche durch Eilim, wo ist die Lese, weil sie gar nicht von Israel, die wissen, als er ist in Nes, bei dem lebendischen Leben. Als er ist in Nes, kommen die Berg, die Tanz, der Eilim, als sie wieder beranen. Wo ist die Lese, der Heiche Bergler, und die Sprungen, als sie wieder junge Schätzen. Hashabayim ist ab in Pfeil, Frana Mala, die Himmel in der Zehung, die Wunder von der Welt, von Mädchen. Hashabayim ist ab in Pfeil. Wird mir doch, also es ist ja so, dass die Zeit nicht von der Welt. Aber was ist das denn? Weil die Welt allein fühlt, als sie hat verloren. Und überhaupt fühlt man, als sie hat verloren, als selbe, welche nicht als sehr schnell wird man kriegen oder wird man schon in Angst kriegen, als solche Gebete. von dem Maßstab. Ein anderer Wüste geworden, weil das nicht zu ist. Von der Erdkorten wird es gebracht. Als es gewesen, eine Zeit, wenn es gestorben war, Rabbeinu HaKodesh. Rabbeinu HaKodesh ist der, was er hat umgeschrieben, der Mishnayos, der Reste. Steht da, wir haben gewähnt. Und wir haben das Master gewähnt. Ein ganz noch heilig, 30 Tage noch einander.